That's pretty good, huh? All right, everybody. You know, we could do this. This would be no problem.
Is that what I did to say?
You did one of those things. Yeah, you were there.
Well, Robert Burrell was the hero. Robert was the hero of the Aries ritual before there was music.
You did that? Well, I thought the radio ritual was before the music. Yeah,
I'll never forget. When I got as far out as you could get, and my flashlight was starting to go out, and I can't remember who it was that was assisting. But he sensed that and came up and gave me another line. Otherwise, I was just going to be
a long the end of the lines. This was in the Beverly Garland of 1990. 19 years ago. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. I was thinking of 89 there, and the sheriff was there.
Probably something happened in the 89 too.
Yeah.
That was so Keith. That was Keith and I were doing the.
Keith was flawless, actually. Yeah. Beverly Hilton's where I got the circuit.
Yeah, you did the circuit. Yeah, you were out there. Yeah, I think you were the disciple.
Yeah, I was.
Yeah, you were the disciple.
And Charlie thereafter.
Never was the same after that.
Life changed. Be careful what you pretend to do. That's serious.
I feel much better hearing music.
Yeah, I agree.
Yes.
We use one as a wake up again.
Yes, it's a wake up. I sat in the sun and then I listened to a couple of songs and I feel back again. I'm not shivering anymore. The cold mind, you know, Saturn or Mercury, this gives you the shivers to your bones. You know. Well, we're going to do that. We're going to do the seventh grade song. Are you ready?
Yeah.
You're about as ready as you're ever going to be, actually. All right, we can stand up. Except don't stand in front of the. Yeah, you can stand up. You can stand up. You can make it if you want. Oh, you don't have to stand up yet. Yeah, you don't really have to. If you want to, you can. Sheldon, that's the spirit, Sheldon. I mean, I don't mean to commend you above and beyond all others, but that's the spirit, Sheldon. Oh, and Gail, too.
I want to hear it.
Well, I don't know. This is a little weird little song here, you know, so this is weird. So let's see what it sounds like. I don't know. Let's see. Thank you. Very, very good.
I think it's third grade, first of all.
No, it's wait till you hear the third grade. That's more third grade.
I remember. Last question.
Have you ever sung Brahma Brahma? That's the third grade song. That, you did that pretty well. But the third grade song is a waltz. Well, it's kind of clavel. It's kind of a humorous song. You know.
Another break.
That was fun. I mean, even if I enjoyed it myself. All right, moving right along.
This observation I had somewhere, but I can't remember where, that Black Lodge is gaining victory through rock and heavy music.
Maybe.
Especially the use of boomboxes,
Boomboxes. I don't know about boomboxes. You can make something nice come through a boombox, but it depends on what.
No.
Well, that's the lower. The lovers of low vibration are definitely moving in.
Well, that is not wrong.
But no, it was said that this actually destroys the sensitivity of young people to the soul.
I'm sure that if you are not built, it would.
Yeah.
But the wise answer is like Christ was going to the dark places.
Yeah, you do.
What is really low goes beyond that low. I don't think it's only us, just the effect of the seventh ray coming in.
A lot of base center.
But then, because there are this message in the words.
Yeah, that
just
too.
Awful words. And then
subliminals. Subliminals and all that. Yeah, it's all hypnotic. Well, that's the one thing I can say about the magic song. It is hypnotic. Relentless. All righty. Very good. We'll sing again later.
How much did you sing?
We will live. Well, we sang for at least 5 minutes.
When? Yesterday?
Oh, no. Yesterday we sang for 25 minutes.
Not me.
Not quite that long, but we still.
We did. We did sing more than one song. We'll sing another song later this afternoon when it looks like the heads are hitting the desk. Yeah, that can happen too, What? The highest and the lowest. Maybe we'll sing some second race song. Or we can do the Brahma Waltz.
Yeah.
Brahma Waltz is kind of. Yeah, you can almost. Yeah, that's one you can all. It almost has a beat. Almost. Get it? I'm not really good for writing songs with beats. Okay. Where were we? Okay, so. A little bit more here, and.
I lost track.
We were dealing with.
He's talking about there's two effects of vibration. Affected by activity has two effects. The effect is twofold. One is it attracts the sound of light response. I didn't get the second one.
I wonder if it just sets things going.
And it's sort of like the
key
before these 4 points.
Yes. I suggest we just let it pass.
Okay.
We know where we can find it, what I mean? Sometimes momentum is very important.
I think I agree with that.
Or, Okay, so here's a little bit more here. Dwelling in the form passes through the following stages. Yeah, this is important. There's two effects of vibration. It kind of reveals and sets going the outer world, and it reveals the self. So I wonder if that, those are two things. Those are two things. First, outer vibration, and then the reunion with the reality of self. That's possible.
Yeah.
Inner vibration. Okay, vibration is registered and the environment has its effect upon the form. Okay. This effect is noted but not understood. The man, under the slow and steady impact of this vibratory effect, slowly awakens consciousness or awareness. This is of the outer world. The environment begins to interest the man, and he regards it as desirable. Steadily, the attraction of the three worlds grows and holds the man in reiterated incarnation. The word reiterated is literally and more academically correct than the word repeated. All right? Good enough? Each of us is really a reiterated word sounding in time and space. That's interesting. Each of us is really a reiterated... I think it was at that time that we all decided on lunch.
Yeah.
Passing by the interpretation of that very interesting phrase.
Did you say it wasn't repeated?
Not repeated, no. But we are the word of the soul, resounding in time and space also. Always with some variation. You know, a different horoscope, but the word sounds within. The soul note sounds within. Later, when the vibration of the environing forms of the natural world becomes monotonous through constant impact over many lives, has anybody reached that point yet? The man begins to turn a... maybe not, you know. Maybe everybody's just vitally interested in the latest vibe, you know. You have has monotony set in? Come on, you know.
Yeah.
Same color. Long time ago, but
they do the cycle, and we walk past this way that much more often, solar sphere or something like that.
That sounds good. Also, he said the true disciple fails to be. Interested, you know, as genuinely interested in the outer world as will the non-disciple. I forget his words exactly, they're very good, but lack of really true engagement and interest, except as a sphere of service.
Well, you become more observant than experiencer
in
a lot of ways.
Yeah, you're abstracting, although you can appreciate the beauty, I think that's important.
Yeah.
The man begins to turn a deaf ear and an unseeing eye upon the familiar, phenomenal world of desire, especially the second-ray type. The word goes forth from soul to form, detach thyself from all that stands around, for it has naught for thee. So look to me, the soul. I am the one who builds, sustains, and draws thee on and up. Look unto me with eyes of love, and seek the path which leads from the outer circle to the point. He begins to turn, I like that, a deaf ear, I almost feel justified, a deaf ear and an unseeing eye upon the familiar. Michael, you don't know what's going on around you. Well, just read this paragraph. That's it. Okay. Later, on the path of probation and of discipleship, this subtler vibratory activity exerts an increasing allure. So he's becoming... insensitive to its vibratory impact and increasingly aware of the vibration of the self.
Can I mention a qualifying word?
Yes.
For the young person or for the younger soul, the word familiar, phenomenal world, is like familiar. If it's not familiar, if it's still all new.
Sure, that's it.
You're going to have to experience
it. Yeah, and you're going to like it. So he's talking about the two ways that vibration works, going in and going out. Later, on the path of probation and of discipleship, the subtler vibratory activity exerts an increasing allure. The outer world ceases to attract. The inner world of the self assumes paramount place in the desire nature. Anybody there yet? That's what I thought. Wow, sneeze on the truth, they say. Sneeze on the truth. That must have been a big, big truth. Little by little, using the language of modern psychology, within the outer form, which is the response apparatus for the process of becoming aware of the phenomenal world, the disciple builds a new and subtler response apparatus whereby the subjective worlds can be known. Awesome. Okay. Totally Awesome. I believe Totally Awesome came in yesterday, didn't he? I think I'm going to turn him off before he might say something else. All right. So an inner response apparatus is being built, and sort of the swing point of that, the really high one, opens up to Buddhi and Atma. But the swing point will open us up to, has been called spiritual discernment, a response to group vibration, and what kind of telepathy? Spiritual telepathy.
Yeah.
Spiritual. This is where we're swinging right now, in these three things. Then after that, we can get into the really more remote qualities, you know, all the amazing Buddhic and ethnic kind of cities. When this stage is reached, there ensues a steady turning away from the vibratory contact with the outer worlds of form and an atrophying of desire in that direction. And I think, you know, that each life kind of repeats this in a way. Well, you know, I mean, you're living an incarnation which is like a little microcosm of your entire incarnational span. As you get older, you tend to turn inward, I think. This may come upon some of us before long. A slight turning inward?
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes. Anyone want to volunteer participation in this?
It happens yearly.
Turning inward?
It happens yearly because of
winter. That's it. You have the yearly cycle. Well, it happens daily, doesn't it? I think we're on
to... That is hourly.
Yeah, we certainly begin the hour well, let me tell you. By the time the hour's over, it's all internal. All right. Okay, then, so the atrophying of the desire in the direction of the outer worlds all seems arid and undesirable. And who is that guy in the Bible that did this? It's not Ezekiel, it's Ecclesiastes. I was trying to think of him the other day. All I remember is his statement, "I have no pleasure in them." But some say that was really King Solomon. Yeah. Ecclesiastes, I think, you know, some book of Ecclesiastes are about him. But, you know, Solomon is maybe the author, the true author.
Yeah, I'm talking about Solomon.
Who is?
Who's
Bill?
Yeah.
All right, all right.
Hey, it's been a long time since court, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I could really say something stupid right now, you know? All right. No. That'd be the end of the afternoon. All right, the atrophying of desire in that direction. All seems arid and undesirable, and all fails to satisfy the ardent, aspiring soul. The difficult process of reorientation to a new world, a new state of being, and a new condition of awareness is set up, and because the inner subtle response apparatus is only an embryonic condition, there is a devastating sense of loss. You see, it's that midway point between the, as they say, the eyes are blinded, and the one eye seeth not as yet. It's the second ray law of repulse formula. And groping in the dark, and a period of spiritual wrestling and exploration that tests the endurance and steadfastness of purpose of the aspirant to the very limits. Well, it'd be good then to have a good Vulcan sign, maybe Virgo. This would be good. So you can test your endurance and steadfastness as you brood upon and cultivate the inner response apparatus. But, that sounds hopeful, and this is the encouraging point to be remembered, all proceedeth under the law, and naught can hinder now the work from going forward. Note these words in Rule 4. There comes a stage when a man is verily and indeed founded on a rock. Was Peter not the rock?
Yes.
Is he Petrus, Peter, something?
Peter the rock.
Okay, the whole church is founded.
Peter rock.
Found my church upon a rock, right? The church's firm foundation. Okay. and not on quicksand. Founded on a rock, and though he may experience the alternation of light and shade, and though the waves of purifying waters may roll over him and threaten to sweep him off his feet, and though he may feel himself deaf and dumb and blind, naught can ultimately defeat the purpose of the soul. This is really the Vulcan phase, you know. You just cannot be swept away. You stand in spiritual being, or at least with a higher orientation, stand as Vulcan stands. And this, obviously, you must be a disciple for this to happen. And obviously, Vulcan will not come in until you are a disciple. I mean, he comes in more obvious ways in the outer world, you know. Not every blacksmith is a disciple. But you know, really, the way we can use it. And Vulcan's about to be discovered. As a matter of fact, maybe none too soon. I mean, I would think it should be discovered quick so that we can strengthen ourselves and stand in spiritual being together and with masked intent. If you're ever going to stand with masked intent, it's good old Vulcan that's going to make it possible. We need that, yes.
Why did you associate Vulcan with Virgo and not Taurus?
Well, he used to be associated with Taurus, but there's this incredible interiority in the Virgo type, and the moon is the esoteric ruler, it veils Vulcan,
okay.
And so that was my reason, you know, that brooding, that inner sense of something is developing, but it's not quite here, it's not perfect here. So this long, sustained interior work that is common to Virgo. You know, Taurus rushes forward, right, once it gets going. But the long haul of discipleship is very Virgo. They have a lot of patience, you know. Maybe, of course, a lot of patience and a lot of perfectionism together. Robert, any comments? Right.
No, that was the Aries moon.
Ah, a point of friction is created.
And what about a Sag moon?
Sag moon, if you're a Virgo with a Sag moon. Well, part of you wants to get going, and other part wants to make sure it's right. You know? So, okay.
Okay.
Sag moon. Well, yeah, you both got, you know, fire moons. How many people here have fire moons? Whoa.
What does that mean, fire moons?
Well, it's Aries, Sag, or Leo. Yeah? Okay, who are the Aries moons? Aries moons, and who are the Leo moons? Only one?
Only me.
And all the rest are Leo moons?
Sag.
Sag, five Sag moons. Are you seeking something? You know, Einstein had a Sag moon.
Yes, he did.
Einstein, Albert Einstein had a Sagittarius moon. I think it does give an orientation towards the higher things.
Do we know, there's rumor that Albert Einstein had a secret doctrine on his desk.
That's what we hear, and palmistry books, too.
Oh,
as a matter of fact, his hand is in Caro's palmistry book. Mm-hmm. You know, the old palm reader Caro,
yeah.
And some of London and all that, yeah? And it has this headline that just starts out of nowhere and ends out of nowhere. It's just floating, his headline.
Wow.
You know, usually they're anchored somewhere, and they seem to go somewhere. This is just a free-floating headline.
And I'm wondering if
it's unattached.
It's unattached.
Yeah. Interesting.
And I'm wondering if at Princeton there was a group of people that he could bounce off of, or he was all alone.
I don't know. I'm sure there's so many legends that grow up around this guy, but maybe someone would know. Yeah.
What was the name of the book?
Well, The Secret Doctrine and the Caro's Palmistry.
Caro?
Chiero. That wasn't his real name.
Oh.
He was a very well-known palmist among intelligent and famous people, probably more in the early part of the 20th century.
Wasn't he a little over the top, like real stays here?
I don't know that much about him. His book was fairly sober, you know. He's not the Comte de Saint-Germain, you know. Some guy took the Comte's name and also wrote a book
like
that.
Oh, yeah, I remember that book.
Yeah, there's better books now than that one. Yeah, yeah. Yes.
So there's a comment about this deaf, dumb, and blind period. I would think, this feels like this might have been really
really right in the person at this stage, you know, some years ago. But I think ever since the Theosophical Movement came, our Kane School conferences, SRUS, so people are seeing a lot more with through one another what's going on today. Try to rest in a different place. So it's hard to be blind.
Well, lying about your own inner potentials. That's what I mean. In other words, your own inner revelations and cities. In other words, I remember talking to a person who was really high up in the Arcane School once and said, "How's your meditation going?" He looked at me and says, "It's dark in there." It was just a moment of a moment of confession. I seem to elicit that from people. But anyway, he meant it. And, you know, it's just before the inner organ opens up, before the eye opens up.
Well, what I'm getting at, Michael,
yes,
is if people look out at the world today, even some years ago, maybe in the 50s, but starting in the 60s at least, and see what's happening, just look at what's going on, you can't help but be something that happened. Happen to you to see the changes.
Well, you can be animated, but
the
question is, do you necessarily see the inner worlds? That's what I'm asking.
But those things, I'm suggesting, I think they evoke.
Okay, well,
the change in the world can evoke the sense of awakening.
Mm-hmm.
The revolution's going on.
Well, I wouldn't doubt that. No, I wouldn't doubt that. I just think this is the general mystic's experience of not having opened up as fully interiorly as one could, let us say. And you're saying that what's going on does do that, or at least it stimulates it, perhaps.
Yeah, but because we're together talking about these things, we see these things, because they're writ large in many ways, now they're all over the place. I think people awaken more to what they can do, what their role is, and maybe not their sense of personal powers yet, that may come later, but something's going on, and it's happening in them, through them, by the fact they're seeing it.
Well, let's just say it's better, huh? I mean, probably.
It is. Left.
Yeah, but you know, the question is, I'm sure that all of us, if we're honest, you know, we're somewhere between where we were and fully developed cities. You know, we're not quiet. You know,
you mean cities?
Yeah, cities. Not cities, but cities.
Cities.
There's still a few things. There's still a few things that might open up, you know, and we're not.
I'm still on in the village.
All that is lacking is the developed spiritual body, which is equipped to respond to the vibration of the inner spiritual world. So we just need some inner spiritual bodybuilding. There's a lot of attention to bodybuilding in the outer world, and you know, we want to be the kinds that know how to build our inner response mechanism. It exists in embryo, and the secret of its use lies in the attitude of the brain to the functions of the etheric body. Mm-hmm. As it exists as an intermediary between the brain, nervous system, and the mind, or between soul, mind, and brain. So, attention to what the etheric body can bring us, to what the etheric body can bring us, will open up the inner spiritual body. This cannot be elaborated here, but the hint can be given for the reflection of the keen aspirant. Well, ponder on this, huh? You know, the etheric body is underlaid by every type of energy, so perhaps if we tune in and try to become etherically sensitive, all manner of incoming energies may be more easily accessible by the brain. The etheric brain, the brain, the immediate consciousness, maybe that's where we should be concentrating in some way. Probably there's a spot, a midway spot which is neither dry nor wet, whereon our feet may be planted and set.
It might also tie into that awakening of the third eye. You know.
That's what I mean. That place in the brain where you know, which is neither dry nor wet, must provide the standing place. It's in the vicinity of the pineal gland. It is etheric in nature. And I think that by visualizing, I think it does work to a degree, the rapidly rotating triangle of energy between the head, Alta, and Ajna, that we evoke the stimulation of this area around the pineal gland, especially if we accompany it with the downward flow from the visualized jewel and the lotus. I have found that visualizing the jewel and the lotus and the jewel at the top of the head and then downward is extremely stimulating. And maybe, you know, one doesn't want to overdo it, but I think it will stimulate some of what's being discussed here.
I think all this speaks to the idea of expanding the awareness of the subtler senses.
Yes.
And not depending so much on the physical ones.
Yes, that's it. So many of us have physical body consciousness.
Right.
When our attention should really be given to the subtler.
Even if just extending it at the beginning level of to the higher physical and the etheric level. And that's really possible.
Sure. Etheric hearing, etheric seeing.
In terms of my teaching, I keep bumping into people and that I just act as if, and darn if they aren't all able to sense the etheric body if I just don't know.
Okay.
So that capacity is right there, it's just not being used.
He says it's right there, and because of the activation of the ethers through planetary change, they're becoming even more visible at this time and more apprehensible.
You know, I don't have that much in terms of visibility. I can faintly sense it, but I can feel it.
Feel it,
anybody can do that.
Well, you know, go into a semi-lit room at night and keep your eyes open, and you're liable to see a lot of activity there.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, oh, I'm seeing things, but you are, you know, and it's all moving. It's the chaos.
It looks like, are those the orgones?
Might be. I don't know.
I thought those were the orgones of light, but that it also makes sense in terms of being the etheric stuff.
I think the orgones from light. I always
right.
Related to prana.
Yeah, the vitality globules of Leadbeater may be the orgones of light. You know.
Yeah.
But I found when I was a kid, you know, I would amuse myself. I would get up really early and I would lie in bed and knock it out, and I found that anything that I wanted to see, I could see in the chaos. What I'm trying to say is I had just to think something and it would take shape in this chaos, and then it would drift down and out of sight, and I could put a new one in. If I re-fastened my eye to it, I could keep it in form as long as I looked at it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, if you practice that sometimes, just, you know, I don't think it's any big deal. I just think it's
closed or
open?
Open.
Yeah. Open.
Okay.
Open. But it all depends. Whether your eyes are closed or open, you'll still see the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a question of projecting your thought into it, mm-hmm. or the image. Good ones and bad ones. Okay. But try it sometime. You know, use a semi-darkened room. Not silly pitch black. Maybe just the slightest little bit of light, just the very, very slightest little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And some nights, it just seems like really the ethers are hot. You know, they're really moving, really moving. You know. But this is a capacity of the physical eye. This is not psychism.
Mm-hmm.
This is physical capacity. Yeah.
Which delicate and just ignore.
Which in the sixth root race will be normal.
Yes, mm-hmm. And we will see a whole new range of experience that's been around us all the time, including the living and the dead, you know. Mm-hmm. The dead are right here in many ways, and passing through and passing by.
What about the new children that are supposed to be developing etheric vision? Is that?
I haven't researched it, but maybe I'm sure many people have it. And they often say, well, I didn't say anything because I just thought everybody saw that. That's what they say.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. Anyway.
When you do a vision quest with the Native American people, spend 2 or 3 days out on the mountain.
Right.
Not fasting or anything, but everything starts shifting and changing when you create a sacred place.
Right.
It just manifests probably in your tradition too.
Okay, well, we need to be on top of these things and see to their cultivation in ourselves and in others. We have therefore the following stages dealt with in Rule 4. Oh, a summary. I love it. Thank you. And pointed out with lucid clarity, yet with that parsimony of phrase which distinguishes all occult and symbolic rite. You ever get the sense that the Tibetan has a razor-sharp mind, you know, just that he kind of fleshes that out a little bit for our sake, but boom, just like that. Number one. The integration of the form as the result of the activity of the soul through the use of sound, light, and vibration. Integrating the form. Okay. Two. The development of a response apparatus for use in the phenomenal world. Okay, where did that come in? What's this? What is it? The energy circulates?
Yeah.
Is the sound, light, vibration of the form merge and blend, and thus the work is one. It proceedeth under the law, and naught can hinder now the work from going forward. The man breathes deeply, he concentrates his forces and drives the thought from him. So did we get here the development of response apparatus for use in the phenomenal world?
Point four we just had there. But
yes, but I don't find it exactly in the rule. Let's see. The eventual turning away from the phenomenal world as the result of, it sounds like he's mixing two things here, about like the creative process and also the evolution of the man. The eventual turning away from the phenomenal world as the result of use and consequent satiety, and the gradual use of the subtler response apparatus. Yeah? He did refer to it, but not exactly in the rule per se, unless we can... He referred to it in the chapter. Maybe this rule leads into these things, somehow.
The following stages dealt with in Rule 4.
Right.
That's what
we just read about that.
We just did.
As we get older, we remove our attention from.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, in the rule itself, you find it. That's the question. He's kind of elaborating a whole sequence of thought.
Well, those four things we just read were stages in Rule 4. He's kind of saying it again. It looks like.
Okay. The response apparatus of the soul, mind, etheric body, brain, and nervous system. Soul, mind, etheric body, brain and nervous system is reoriented, and the man becomes aware of the kingdom of the soul, another kingdom, a nature. The turning away from the kingdom of the world to the kingdom of the soul becomes an esoteric habit, and in this thought lies hid the secret of esoteric psychology. The man is stabilized in the spiritual life, not from hinder. Now, have you made your own reorientation? Do you have the esoteric habit of turning inward toward the kingdom of the soul? Yes, probably so. Well, you know, we're caught often between extroversion and introversion. Extroversion is more than the type of personality we're dealing with. It's what you're facing, what you're trying to see, what you're looking at mostly. When you're living your life, are you mostly focused on external experience, or is it internal experience, even though you have to serve in the outer world? I think a lot of people are turned inward. You know, you got a downward gazing soul and an upward gazing soul in incarnation, it seems. Okay. Turning away. Knock and hinder. Okay. Now let's see. The science of the breath. We've got to look at this. The man breathes deeply. He concentrates his forces and drives the thought form from him. Okay. This is a phrase covering many aspects of rhythmic living. So the breath stands for all types of rhythmic living. Breath stands for all types of rhythmic. It is the magical formula for the science of pranayama. The Yama is the god of death, right? Yama? And
Yama was the serpent also, the serpent in the tree of Maya.
In the Babylonian tree.
The husband of Maya.
Right. I just looked up.
I think it might mean more like control.
Control, this article, Yama, for Hindu tradition, Yama Yama, literally death, but could be controlled too, I suppose. The introduction, a yama, literally death, is a rule of code of conduct for living, which will help bring a compassionate death to the ego or lower self. The yamas comprise the shall not in our dealings with the external world, as the niyamas comprise the shall do's in our dealings with the inner world. Mm-hmm. So I think we must be dealing with the commandments.
Those are the first stages of the eightfold path.
Thou shalt not breathe.
Well, in a way, yes.
But it's related to personality anyway.
10 yamas are codified as the restraints in numerous scriptures, including the Shandilya and Varaha, Upanishads, etc., etc., etc. So which one are the, let's see, 10 traditional yamas? Uh-huh, okay. These are the Ahimsa, nonviolence, Satya, truthfulness, Asteya, non-stealing, Brahmacharya, divine continence, celibacy, etc., Tashama, patience, releasing time, functioning in the now. Then, so those are shall nots. So shall not be violent, shall not lie, shall not steal, shall restrain, those are lower. Now we are turning inward, aren't we? Dipriti, steadfastness in overcoming, non-perseverance, fear and indecision, seeing through to completion, persistence, I suppose, daya, compassion, arjava, honesty, straightforwardness. These are different ones that I'm used to hearing. Mitahara, moderate appetite, and saucha. Saucha.
Your pentangle was underneath.
Yeah, that's more like it.
Yeah.
Okay. Ahimsa, Satya, Astya, Brahmacharya, and Aparigraha. Aparigraha, abstinence from avariciousness. Yes, okay, that's better. More familiar, that is. And the importance of yamas. Observance in the abstinences, or yamas, help attain a healthy mind and body. The yamas together with the niyamas are the essential first two steps. Further, the Patanjali states that it is not enough to observe them for the individual ends, that is, eradication of hostility, conquering self, etc. One must follow them without a desire for any end goals. The secret to attainment of these is to harness the mind into thinking of the opposite of the element one needs to overcome. Right, well, we have to try to make this look together, but in the light of the soul, what do we have? The eight means of yogas, and it's yama and niyama, right?
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, let's see, very quickly
yama,
here.
Niyama, asanas, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, and samadhi.
That's it. Yama. Yama, yama. Five. These are called the five commandments. Yama. Okay. Let's see what the next one is. Yama or five commandments, universal duty. Look at that. 81. That's a mistake in the book. Okay. Okay. The eight means of yoga are yama. Commandments are yama. The rules are niyama. And posture, asana, pranayama is right control of the life force. Or death, I suppose leading to suspended animation. Then pratyahara is abstraction, attention or dharana, meditation, dhyana, and contemplation or samadhi. Yeah, as you said. Okay. Okay,
but
so.
All these things are given to us by the Tibetan and the Buddhists.
Yeah.
But just in different ways.
Yes, slightly different words. And okay, so here we have the commandments. And these are five in number. And let's see if we can find the niyama. Niyama, how many of them? The rules or niyama. Ishvara, the five rules. Ishvara constitutes five rules, and which are they? Here they are. Ah, yeah. The rules or niyama, pathya, asana, okay. Right observances. These are five in number. And what are they? The five commandments and the five rules for Hindu. Okay. Ah, here it is. Internal and external purification, contentment, fiery aspiration, spiritual reading, and devotion to Ishvara constitute niyama, or the five rules. Five rules and five commandments. Well, that would be enough of a curriculum for one's whole life. Right there. Just the eight means of yoga, that would be enough. Leads to samadhi. So that's pretty good. Leads through concentration, to meditation, to contemplation, samadhi, right posture. Okay. All right.
Samadhi means you can sit on a couch for 2 weeks. Is that correct? Samadhi.
Samadhi?
Samadhi.
Yes, but what are you doing on the couch?
That's the question. What is samadhi? What are you doing?
Well, you're not on the couch, but your body is.
Right.
Right.
There's usually a chela watching.
Looking after your body, feeding it potato chips.
If you're on it, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you've got a future. Okay, the science of the breath. Good. So many aspects of rhythmic living are contained in this. It is the magical formula for the science of pranayama, and we talked about, so it's death and control. Death, birth. It is control and management of the vital forces. It covers the art of the creative life, which apparently must be rhythmic. I think. It sweeps a man into tune with the pulsating life of God himself, and this through detachment and reorientation. In other words, it's God's impulses, it's not our own. So there are many meanings to the man breathes deeply. Are we breathing deeply in our life?
So synchronizing our breath with God's in a sense.
Meaning we know the times and seasons. You know, and we know about the flow of energy streams in times and seasons, and we act with them, and not against. If we act by desire, we act against. But if we are detached, then we can go with God's flow.
And this is therefore understanding astrology and sidereal motion. Is that correct?
It will all help. Yes. It will all help. But it's also kind of a subtle intuitive attunement to what's coming in, what's going out, what's present, what's returning, you know. Whether or not we had astrology, which can help us, it's an intuitive attunement to the ebbs and flows of energy. Okay. Good old energy there. Energy. Yes. All right. It is notably interesting as a demonstration of the succinctness and inclusiveness of occult phrases as in Rule 4. Mm-hmm. Right. In other words, it's just a little phrase, but it handles much. The art of breathing is dealt with in three phases, and these I commend to each one of you for the most careful consideration. Okay? Someone read this, please.
There is first the aspect of inhalation. The man breathes deeply. From the very depths of his being, he draws the breath. In the process of phenomenal living, he draws the very breath of life from the soul. This is the first stage. In the process of detaching himself from phenomenal living, he draws from the depths of his being and experiences the life, that it may be rendered again back to the source from whence it came. In the occult life of the disciple, as he develops the new and subtler use of his response apparatus, he practices the science of the breath and discovers that through deep breathing, including the three stages of the deep, middle, and top breaths, he can bring into activity in the world of esoteric experiences his vital body with its force centers.
So we have the connection between the gaseous and the etheric level, and if we want to activate the presence of our vital body, we use the gaseous sheath. Gaseous sheath. Through which we breathe. Okay, go ahead.
So, pardon me, what we're saying is that with the deep breath, you calm the body. With the physical body, the middle breath, you calm the emotions. And the top breath, you are now feeding the mental plane.
It could be. I'm not sure about these three types of breath. It might have something to do with where in the etheric body you're working, but I think it would have the kind of correlations you're talking about. Let's just ask here, can this correlate with the three vehicles? Okay. Where were you, Glenda?
Thus, the three aspects of deep breathing cover the entire soul experience, and the relationship to the three types of breath touched upon above can be worked out by the interested expert.
Okay. Okay, well, we can do that then if we wish. I mean, it's true that, the deep, middle, and top do suggest the three vehicles, but I think they may also suggest that which is below the diaphragm, that which is between the diaphragm and the head, and that which is above. And they probably suggest different kinds of pranas, of which actually there are five, we are told, but the fifth one includes them all.
Well, actually, you know, in Tai Chi, the training of the breath, so from the belly, from the Kara area, you breathe through your stomach, then you breathe through your middle region, mm-hmm. your rib cage, that's broken, and then you breathe through the lungs, that's the
okay.
top breath.
So that's also a threefold, threefold.
I think it's kind of like understand the complete the breath.
So it's very general.
Yes, and that's what you want to do in pranayama. I mean, that's the basic mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like the etheric vehicle in each one of those areas is activated. Obviously, we have our mind on the ethers as we're doing that, and maybe not so much on the physical organs per se, mm-hmm. seems to me. Because we're trying to activate the etheric body, and the right use of the breath will ignite that. It doesn't have so much perhaps to do with the physical organs per se, although they are there. Yeah, I mean, even as we are thinking about locations in the body, we need to think etherically rather than strictly physically. That's the new way. That is the where our attention used to be put. And then I think we will find that energy follows thought, and that we can, via the inner or third eye, direct the healing force via the ethers, and then the balance will be maintained. We're not fooling around so much with the organs per se. Yeah, okay. Although if we have an organ there, it's useful, because he says when you don't have an organ, it's more dangerous. He says there is no real outer organ for the pituitary body. There is no real outer organ for the pineal gland, you know. Pituitary body and pineal gland, or those areas around the ajna and the head center, don't have specific outer organs unless you consider the brain the entire organ of that. He says, but when you're dealing with the solar plexus, you have a gland that will help you there. When you're dealing, you know, with the lungs, you have the thymus or heart, you have, what are all the glands, you know? They have glandular outlets, and therefore the energy can be drained off. But when you don't have the right kind of organ and outlet, they're less complete up here, he says. So he's much more reserved about giving the instructions for these higher, for the higher apparatus. Somewhere in this period here, it deals with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so, who would read the next one? Next he's breathing deeply. So what do we say about breathing deeply? It's all manner of rhythmic living, it's an attunement with cycles. What else is it? We just read it, but we should just remember that as much as possible.
This is the inhalation stage, so...
Yes, this is just the inhalation stage. Yeah. This is the first aspect. There's the first aspect, this inhalation. Okay, good.
And we can have a more shallow breath, or middle, or deeper breath.
Yes.
And in general, what you learn is to have a deeper breath.
Yeah.
That it helps in every sense to calm your emotions, to calm mm-hmm. your mind,
yeah.
and to be more present in your body.
Mm-hmm.
It actually nourishes the body more thoroughly than a shallow breath.
Yeah.
Okay, and I'm wondering what that has to do with the five pranas. I'm sure it's connected. But not being, okay. Let's see, let's go on.
We learn more about the next few stages.
Okay, who will take the next one?
Just say briefly that the yogis all must have nourished themselves mm-hmm. with the breath, because it said that they ate very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
And they could stay in a meditation retreat
and
all for many, many days without eating.
But they had also a little bit fresher air.
Yeah.
weren't in LA.
Right. Okay, next person.
Next, we read, he concentrates his forces. Here we have the stage indicated, which can be called retention of the breath. It is a holding of all the forces of the life steadily in the place of silence. And when this can be done with ease and with forgetfulness of process through familiarity and experience, then the man can see and hear and know in a realm other than the phenomenal world.
So when we took the initial activating breath, what was the result of that when we breathed deeply? Did he say somewhere that the etheric body was activated? Did you say that?
Yeah,
she's four centers of our life. Okay, good. And now, through the concentration of the energies,
retention
of the breath, then we can. So in the sequence of breathing, it would be during the retention of breath that we would expect to see and hear and know in realms other than the phenomenal world. Mm-hmm. At least that would certainly promote it. Go ahead, Lynn.
In the higher sense, this is the stage of contemplation, that lull between two activities, as it has been so aptly called. The soul, the breath, the life, has withdrawn out of the three worlds, and in the secret place of the Most High, is at rest and at peace, contemplating the
beatific
vision. In the life of the active disciple, it produces those interludes which every disciple knows, when, through detachment and the capacity to withdraw, he is held by nothing in the world of form.
Mm-hmm.
As he is but wrestling toward perfection and has not yet attained, these interludes of silence, withdrawingness, and of detachment are frequently difficult and dark. All is silence, and he stands appalled by the unknown and by the apparently empty stillness in which he finds himself. This is called, in advanced cases, the dark night of the soul, the moment before the dawn, the hour before the light streams forth.
Anything we want to say about that paragraph?
That sounds like... I always think that this dark night of the soul, it refers more to the preparation to the fourth initiation, but it makes it like a kind of a lower correlation with this, the retention of the air on what happens in those cases.
A time when revelation fails to present itself.
Yeah, waiting.
It's a waiting revelation. And often without encouragement.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what do you say? That the true dark night of the soul is the settling upon you of the complete picture of all human suffering. And that sounds more like the fourth initiation.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Could there be a dark night in the soul before each initiation?
I wouldn't be surprised if the second initiation doesn't have one. As a matter of fact, the 2, 4, and 6, he tells us in chapter 10 of the darkness which has to be penetrated. There are several etheric veils, 4 etheric veils. I'm remembering one, especially before the 4th, before the 6th initiation, maybe one before the 3rd initiation, I'm not exactly sure. Let's just see if I can, because it's very interesting. There's kind of a mini dark night before the 2nd degree, and a number of people think they're taking the 4th degree when they're doing that, you know? It is a very difficult initiation.
Do we think that there's some sense of discouragement or depression associated with the dark night of the soul, or is it just a darkness that we all experience?
I think that sometimes there is a feeling of futility. My impression is. A glamour illusion, 6th initiation, okay. Maybe I'll use the word penetrate 6, see how that works. No, it's not the 6th initiation, it's monadic, no? Well, let's try 6. I don't think it'll work because I think I intuited that it was the 6th, but it's not the... No, actually it's in chapter 10. chapter 10. There's nothing. What is it? Does it go... where is chapter 10 of the Raised Initiations? Could we have to spell it? No?
I like 10.
Oh, I know what to do. How does it go? The rules for work within the veils of Maya. Okay, now we should find it.
Rule 10.
Okay, so it starts on page 182. And let's see if we can find this. This is an amazing chapter because it deals with St. Paul, Moses, and the Christ, and how they penetrated the veils of Maya. That's that amazing meditation. It's really the aggressive meditation to clean out the veils of Maya. If anyone wants to work on that, just let me know.
Here's Moses.
And I should be able to... Ah, that's it. Okay. This is it. These four veils present something of the idea of the darkness into which the initiate enters before certain great expansions. Now let's see, what is this four veils? Let me just, so that I don't ever have to go looking for this again. Who knows? I do not. DK there admits to not being a sixth degree initiate. That was then, this is now. Four veils and areas of penetration and darkness. Okay. I think you'll enjoy reading about them, as they all have immediate relevance. Okay. So, one more.
I think you have a misspelling in the title. No.
Four veils and areas of penetration and
no
and of darkness. Yeah, thank you. It has to do, and no doubt, the trouble is that it's all my codes. You know, as they say in Harry Potter, he got his spells mixed. He was a very sad thing to behold, right? Veil 1, that which faces the disciple as he wrestles with the dweller on the threshold and becomes conscious of the angel of the presence, though as yet sees him not. This is around the third degree. Veil 2, that which the initiate encounters at the fourth initiation and which forces him to cry out in his blindness, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? The words uttered by the Christ at that time, if they were the Christ, and as the participator had been forgotten by the Orthodox, though preserved by the esotericists. To them, HPB refers in the secret doctrine, something like, the robe of my glory no longer serves. Something like that. Oh, there were words uttered by Jesus and maybe words uttered by the Christ. They were, because he was the participator. The Christ was the participator, sixth degree above Jesus. Veil 3, which I think is, that mysterious blindness which overwhelms the initiate when, as the embodiment of all the forces of the spiritual triad, he faces the monad and is impelled forward by the devastating will of the first aspect. Of this I may not write, it concerns the sixth and seventh initiation. So he's already writing in a way beyond himself, possibly, but also he may not be able, he may not be given permission to write it.
Because he has no personal experience to be writing about.
Possibly, but then there's also the fact that sometimes they just don't let certain information be put down in. And this is fascinating. Veil 4, that unknown, impenetrable void, the utter darkness of negation, which those who are in the council chamber of the Lord of the world and who are focused in Shambhala face, ninth initiation, when the time comes for them to negate our planetary life expression and experience altogether. They must then leave behind all the seven planes of spiritual and human experience and pass onward and out into phases of life and being for which we have no words and of which we have no conception. They lead through the fourth veil on the cosmic physical etheric planes, which I think is the correspondence to the lower veil of aspiration. Aspiration, separation, distortion, impulsion. Okay, they must leave behind all the seven planes of spiritual and human experience and pass on to what we have no conception of. They leave through the fourth veil of the cosmic etheric levels on the highest plane of our seven planes and pass on to the cosmic astral plane. There they negate its existence as they had earlier negated the existence of the astral plane, so familiar an illusion to all of us. The initiate passes on to the cosmic astral plane and finds what? Who knows? I do not. So, well, all right, I guess we can stop reading this author. Well, so it looks like we have these experiences of darkness before the third degree, or maybe it's the second, I'm not sure what number one is, because we're said to catch a glimpse of the dweller and the angel at the third degree. Becomes conscious, well, it's the second or third degree, I think third degree actually. And then the fourth degree, then the sixth and seventh degree, and then the ninth degree. Passing on out onto the cosmic astral plane.
Is there not a dark night of the soul that the mystic experiences, one who is caught up in a state of ecstasy and then finds himself in its opposite laments? And
that's more like second degree kind of thing, isn't it? You know, or that kind of thing. I've lost God. Where are you, God? Please return to me. All that kind of thing. I'm sure we've all been with it. I mean, you know, experienced that kind of thing in the past. I think there is a sense of being really, really high. I wonder if people who are on drugs experience that, you know, and instead of calling for God, they get the next shot or something. You know, you just feel like you've lost everything because that wonderful high that you had, mainly God, is gone, and you don't know the way back. That's the thing. And what we're trying to do is to devise the science of the way back, so we don't have to be dependent on God's whim, which is really like being dependent on the state of our own form, because God is always there. It's just the form that is fluctuating, we are told. Anyway, this is in Rays and the Initiations. I think it's very, very powerful. Sure, you know, did you read the mystics when you were younger, any of you, you know, So, my 10 favorite mystics. Anyone read Aldous Huxley's Perennial Philosophy? Yeah, it's a really wonderful book. And there he epitomizes the experience of many of these people, right? But the thing is, you know, how to find God once you lose him. And some of the greater mystics sort of lived in God all the time. They managed, right? Did she live that way? Mm-hmm.
Their mother's grave that he read about her after her death, they imprinted some of her diary.
It was opposite. It was the opposite. She felt like she was living exiled from God. We need to put science into God, you know.
But, you know, we don't know, did she experience that, yes, very deep ways, because she was so mystical in herself. And if we think about what she did, she did enormous service. So, what about if she was going through the fourth?
Well, you mean that no man's land through which one must... You know, because if you have a six-ray soul, which probably she and Father Damien are somehow, you don't necessarily expect the same kind of intellectual rigor that you find in other types of souls. In other words, people achieve on different lines, and why is Master Jesus and Master Serapis, why are they going to Sirius for Mass? There's not an equality of achievement. So it is possible.
And
it's a huge service.
Meryl Wolf says that about Ramakrishna too. He may have the intellect.
I guess he, but you know what Vivekananda said? He said, he's the true Nanny. he's, you know, I guess there's Mani Yoga and Mani Yoga. Yeah, Brad Pitt, he knows Mani Yoga.
You know, I think that realistically, in verse 15, things, as you said, Halina, that it's today, it's nowadays, and our society would not allow that the folks and people could hang anybody or nail them on the cross. But how long those periods are, so we don't know. It depends all, I think it depends a lot of the love in the heart, how much people are loving the others, how much this soul is willing to go through some enormous sacrifices. And I have translated that always to myself, that we talk then concretely about the power which is descending through that individual being. It's not anyone there helping them. They are making the way through that unknown land which no one walked before. And that's why it is dark. And of course there are eyes and ears who are looking and they can see how one is approaching. But that's why one is said to be alone, that one can really show, will they become our hearts? Or
yeah, you have to demonstrate your own resources. You can't ever, forever be dependent. It's that no man's land that's on neither one of the crosses.
And that we do. That is how we do. And I'm thinking about her, that she was still doing, even though she was thinking herself that she was failing and there is no God, because she was,
well, the God had abandoned her,
pushing herself through the darkness of humanity.
Yeah, that's right. The whole dweller, you know, you might say that a big aspect of the humanity's dweller was confronting her. Okay, let's move forward. In the science of pranayama, it is the moment following upon inhalation wherein all the forces of the body have, through the medium of the breath, been carried upward to the head and concentrated there prior to being breathed forth. This moment of retention, when properly carried forward, produces an interlude of intense concentration, and it is this moment that the aspirant must seize opportunity. Let's see, what does he say? There's a seizing of opportunity in Rule 12, something like the web pulsates, it ebbs and flows, well, not ebbs and flows, but contracts and expands. Let the disciple seize the midway point and thus release those prisoners of the planet whose note is just and rightly tuned. There's certain moments of opportunity in the magical process.
Interlude, is that a second stage he was talking about?
Yeah.
The three stages?
This is the first interlude still, somehow. He hasn't breathed forth yet. But it's an interlude of intense concentration. He's still dealing with contemplation here. Then comes the process of exhalation, and in this Rule 4, he drives the thought form from him. Okay, this is ever the result of the final stage of the science of the breath. He doesn't here discuss the outer interlude of manifestation so much. I don't think so. The form, vitalized by the one who breathes in correct rhythm, is sent forth to do its work, fulfill its mission, study this idea with care, for it holds the secret of creative work.
Did you want to highlight exhalation, because you had done it?
Yes, I've done it. Yes, sharp eyes. Just give this man your books for proofing. he really wants to do nothing else in the world but proof your books. Okay. In the experience of the soul, the form for manifestation of the three worlds is created through intense meditation, uses that word, which is ever the paralleling activity of breathing. Okay? Then by an act of the will resulting in a breathing force, act of the will resulting in a breathing? Come on. Well, that's stuck again. What's going on with my controller here? Okay. Resulting in a breathing forth and engendered or arrived at dynamically in the interlude of contemplation or retention of the breath. It's one of those summary sentences. And created, the created form is sent forth into the phenomenal world to serve as a channel of experience, a medium of expression, and a response apparatus in the three worlds of human living. Okay, in the life of the disciple, through meditation and discipline, he learns to reach high moments of interlude whenever he concentrates his forces on the plane of soul life. And then...
Did you want to highlight that a little bit?
Wait. No, but that's the one that's the one we've been doing. That is that interlude. This is the high moment. It's not the lower interlude, right? Whenever he concentrates his forces on the plane of soul life, and then, again by an act of his will, he breathes forth his spiritual purposes, plans, and life into the three worlds, the thought form that he has constructed as to the part he has to play, and the concentration of energy which he has succeeded in bringing about, become effective. Okay, this is how we can make our thoughts effective. The energy needed for the next step is breathed forth by the soul and passes down into the vital body, thus galvanizing the physical instrument with the needed constructive activity. So this is how the breath occurs, right?
You know what this interesting thing is? It's missing the fourth stage of the breath, that is the waiting, the pause between inhalation and exhalation. That's such an important part of the breathing process also, where silence happens. And
isn't that what he's talking about, though? He's talking about the higher interlude.
No, he's not. He's talking about the higher, but I'm talking about the lower.
Oh, yeah, he hasn't done the lower interlude yet.
He's not doing it.
No, not here, but he does it elsewhere.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I wonder why he's doing it here.
Why not? Because that's a very... this one, the thought form that he has constructed becomes effective. The energy needed for the next step is breathed forth by the soul and passes down into the vital body, thus galvanizing the physical instrument with the needed constructive activity. Do you think he's describing the lower interlude here?
No, it's just exhalation.
That asks, yes?
I think he is.
No, he's making forth is the exhalation.
So that's like
breathe forth by the soul and passes down into the vital body. Thus galvanizing the physical instrument with the needed constructive activity.
That's the exhalation.
It is before us, but then what about galvanizing? No. In other words, somehow stimulating.
That's still part of the exhalation.
Mm-hmm. That aspect of the plan which he has appreciated in contemplation, and that part of the general purpose of the hierarchy in which his soul feels called upon to cooperate, is breathed forth simultaneously by the mind and brain, and he drives the thought, this is part of the exhalation, drives the thought form from him. Okay? Someone read this.
Finally, in the science of pranayama, this stage covers that exhaling breath which, when carried forward with thought and conscious purpose behind it, serves to vitalize the centers and fill each of them with dynamic life. More need not be said here. Thus, in the science of breathing deeply, we have the whole process of creative work and of the evolutionary unfoldment of God and nature covered. It is the process whereby the life, the one existence, has brought the phenomenal world into being. And rule four is a digest of the creation.
Amazing.
It is equally the formula under which the individual soul works as it centers its forces for the manifestation in the three worlds of human experience.
So in the creation of man, the individual soul as it centers for the manifestation of the three worlds, okay. This is the soul as creator of man, and man as creator of secondary thought forms. Okay.
The right use of the life breath is the whole art at which the aspirant, the disciple, and the initiate work. Bearing in mind, however, that the science of the physical breath is the least important aspect and follows sequentially upon the right use of energy, which is the word we apply to the divine breath or life.
The right use of energy is the word applied to the divine So the outer type of breathing is the least important, although it can entrain the inner. Go ahead.
Finally, in the mental life of the disciple, and in the great work of learning to be a conscious creator in mental matter and so produce results in the phenomenal world, this fourth rule holds the instructions upon which the work is based. It embodies the science of the entire magical work.
One rule, embodying the entirety. Interesting. And it's the fourth, of course, which related to manifestation. Yeah, okay. Therefore,
this rule warrants the closest consideration and study. Rightly understood and rightly studied, it would lead each aspirant out of the phenomenal world into the kingdom of the soul.
Does that appeal to you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Its instructions, if carried out, would lead the soul back again into the phenomenal world as the creating force in soul magic and as the manipulator and dominating factor of and through the medium of the form. In the training of the Occidental students, blind, unquestioning obedience is never asked. Suggestions are made as to method and as to technique, which has proved effective for thousands of years and with many disciples. Some rules as to breathing, as to helpful process, and as to practical living on the physical plane will be imparted. But in the training of the new type of disciple, during the coming age, it is the will of the watching gurus and rishis that they be left freer than has heretofore been the case. This may mean a slightly slower development at the beginning, but will result, it is hoped, in a more rapid unfoldment during the later stages upon the path of initiation.
Okay.
Therefore, students are urged to go forward during their period of training with courage and with joy, knowing that they are members of a band of disciples, knowing that they are not alone, but that the strength of the band is theirs. The knowledge of the band is theirs too, as they develop the capacity to apprehend it. And knowing also that the love and wisdom and understanding of the watching elder brothers are back of every aspiring son of God, even though apparently and wisely he is left to wrestle through to the light and the strength of his own impotent soul.
We know he did that on purpose, right? It was obviously purposeful. What else could it be? It drove the point home.
Somewhere else, where's that? I remember in the initiation compilation, he says that the loneliness of initiation is but a necessary illusion. So there's a sense of being all alone, but again, you have to fall back on yourself and make it through. Then you realize all these have been supporting you and with you.
Yeah, we must get the best of ourselves instead of leaning on others. And even if we have to suffer through the illusion that they are not there in a supportive manner, it's better so that we draw upon every resource that we have. Are you a little troubling?
Well, when you see the second one, the last sentence of the above paragraph, he says, this may mean a slightly slower development at the beginning, but will result in hope in a more rapid unfoldment. It sounds more like an experiment than...
Well, probably experiment, but they probably have reasons to hope, you know. Probably they're not involved in blind hope.
This is all an experiment.
Yeah. I guess we have to realize how much is on our shoulders in this experiment. Yeah. And how fast or well things could go if we just seize hold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But actually, in the rays and initiation, it says somewhere that human progress is actually incidental.
yes, to some larger issues, larger developments, absolutely, in the planet. Yes, that's good. Yeah. Well, tell you what, we're going to go on to rule 5, but we'll take a little break first. Okay, take a little break. Yeah? Okay. Very good. Okay.
That was a good